Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. China After Mao, The Rise of a Superpower is a nonfiction history and political analysis by Frank de Kutter that examines China from Mao Zedong's death in 1976 through the early Xi Jinping era. Rather than repeating the familiar story of smooth reform, the book argues that China's rise was uneven, improvised, and deeply shaped by the Communist Party's determination to preserve monopoly rule, drawing on archival materials and official records. De Kutter presents the post-Mao decades as a period of opportunism, internal contradiction, and state-directed adaptation, rather than a simple transition to market liberalization. The book is especially interested in how economic growth, state control, surveillance, and political continuity develop together. It is written for readers who want a revisionist account of China's transformation and a critical reassessment of the assumptions behind the reform era narrative. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the rise of China was not a straightforward reform story. A central argument of the book is that China did not become a superpower through a clean, coherent program of reform and opening up. De Kutter challenges the common view that the post-1976 period followed a deliberate plan that steadily moved the country toward market prosperity. Instead, he portrays change as fragmented and often opportunistic, shaped by local experimentation, shifting political pressures, and favorable global conditions. This matters because it changes how readers interpret China's economic success growth was real. But it emerged from an environment in which the party frequently improvised and adapted rather than executing a stable, long-term blueprint. The book, therefore, invites skepticism towards simple modernization narratives and asks readers to separate economic outcomes from the political myths built around them. By stressing contingency, it also shows how historical accidents can be mistaken for strategic design when a regime later narrates its own success. Secondly, party power remained the constant behind every economic shift. The book repeatedly emphasizes that the Chinese Communist Party never abandoned its core priority, retaining political monopoly and control over the means of production. In De Kutter's reading, this continuity is more important than the ideological changes usually associated with the post-Mao era. Economic adjustments were tolerated when they strengthened the state or preserved party dominance, not because the regime was committing itself to pluralism or genuine liberalization. This framework helps explain why economic reforms in China often coexisted with tight political control, censorship, and coercive institutions. Rather than seeing the post-Mao decades as a move away from Leninist rule, the book presents them as an adaptation of authoritarian rule to new circumstances. That argument is valuable because it connects policies across different leaderships, including Xi Jinping. It suggests that current governance patterns have deeper roots than many observers assume. The result is a portrait of continuity beneath apparent change. Thirdly, archives and internal documents are used to dismantle official myths. De Kutter's method is one of the book's most important features. He relies heavily on archival materials and previously inaccessible government documents to reconstruct how policy was discussed and implemented inside the Chinese system. This source base allows him to contrast official propaganda with the internal logic of decision-making, revealing contradictions between public narratives and practical realities. The use of archives is not just a scholarly detail. It is central to the book's argument because it shows how the regime managed its own image while pursuing very different goals behind closed doors. The book's revisionist force comes from this documentary approach, which undercuts celebratory accounts of orderly development and exposes the mixture of secrecy, improvisation, and political calculation that shaped outcomes. For readers, this means the book is not merely argumentative, but evidentiary, aiming to show that many standard accounts of China's rise depend on self-serving narratives rather than direct engagement with primary sources. Fourthly, state control, shadow banking, and surveillance grew alongside prosperity. Another major theme is the coexistence of growth with expanding authoritarian infrastructure. The book does not deny that China became wealthier and more influential. Instead, it asks what institutional forms made that possible and what kind of society emerged from the process. De Kutter highlights the growth of shadow banking, the persistence of state privilege, and the development of an extensive surveillance apparatus as features of the system that accompanied economic expansion. This approach complicates any notion that prosperity naturally produces liberalization. In the book, wealth and coercion advance together, with the state maintaining leverage over finance, information, and society. That insight is important because it reframes China not as a market-driven exception to authoritarianism, but as a case in which market mechanisms were incorporated into a durable party-state structure. The result is a more cautionary reading of modernization, showing how economic dynamism can strengthen rather than weaken authoritarian power. Lastly, the book links the post-Mao era to Xi Jinping's hardening rule, although the book covers a broad period. It uses the later years to argue that Xi Jinping should be understood as part of a longer pattern rather than a dramatic break. De Cutter's interpretation is that the increasing hostility toward Western criticism, the tightening of domestic control, and the consolidation of party power did not emerge from nowhere under Xi. Instead, they are presented as the culmination of a system already committed to one-party dominance and strategic self-preservation. This is a useful lens because it discourages overly personalized explanations of Chinese politics that treat the current leadership as an anomaly. The book also connects China's response to external pressure, including the global financial crisis, to its internal political instincts. By doing so, it shows how the regime's global ambitions and domestic repression are interconnected. Readers come away with a stronger sense that present-day China is the product of long institutional continuities rather than a sudden authoritarian turn. In conclusion, China After Mao: The Rise of a Superpower will be most useful for readers interested in modern Chinese history, political science, international relations, and debates over authoritarian development. It is especially suited to those who want a critical alternative to celebratory accounts of China's economic rise. The practical value of the book lies in how it sharpens judgment about the relationship between growth and political control, showing why economic modernization does not necessarily mean liberalization or institutional openness. Intellectually, it offers a strong corrective to simplified narratives about reform, helping readers understand how the Chinese party state could modernize while preserving coercive power. What distinguishes this book from many other works on China is its insistence on archival evidence and its refusal to treat the rise of the superpower as either inevitable or benign. It reads less like a conventional success story and more like a study of how a ruling party adapted to survive, absorbed economic change, and turned that change into a basis for renewed control. That combination makes it valuable for anyone trying to understand both contemporary China and the political logic behind its ascent. If you would like to support Frank De Cutter, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.